Leadership makes a difference, for better, for worse. My family mocked me when I went out for a walk on our vacation at the Thousand Islands. The family said, "Dad's going out for a walk, and he's going to make some new friends." Okay, I admit, I'm a friendly guy, and I didn't disappoint them or fail to meet their expectations. On my walk, I engaged in a chat with a young man who was on his driveway, and I asked him about what it's like living year-round in the Thousand Islands. Then a buddy of his pulled into the driveway, a big, strong guy, and he joined us in the conversation. I couldn't help myself. I asked him, "Hey, did you ever play football?" I said, "You've got the build of a football guy." Well, he just smiled and he went on to inform me that, yes, he had played football back in his days in university. He was a university player. And turns out that he was a star player on his team, and the team then had quite a successful record. But when this guy and some of his teammates left the team in 2001, the team started losing games, and often in embarrassing fashion. So I said, "Well, besides you leaving, what happened? Why did the team collapse?" And without missing a beat, this guy said to me, "Leadership. Bad coaching. Poor leadership was the overwhelming factor." Yes, leadership makes a difference, for better or for worse. I was reminded of this guy's assessment about a week later when on my Facebook newsfeed up popped a picture of my good friend Bob celebrating his 94th birthday with family members. Bob was my field education supervisor when I was in seminary. He supervised my ministry endeavors while I was a student at the seminary. Bob, before he became a church administrator, retired from being a leadership trainer at Bell Canada. Bob practiced what he preached. He was an excellent leader. He inspired, he empowered, he helped other people succeed. He was a man of impact, of positive influence on others. Take the peanut camp. That church camp, the first year struggled, 27 kids in all for the whole summer. The next year, Bob encouraged me to direct the camp, and with Bob's help, we grew the camp to the point that we had close to 100 boys and girls each week over the course of the summer for the next few years. I was the guy in the spotlight. I was the front man, but behind the scenes was Bob. He was the leader of this leader. And when I received an award from the seminary for excellence in church ministry, though my name was on the award, when I read it, all I could see was Bob's name. He was an outstanding coach. He was a great leader. He showed me excellence in leadership. Hey, while I was at the cottage, I read a book entitled Leadership is Dead. Is leadership dead? Is it outdated? Is it obsolete? Has it gone beyond its expiry date? Is leadership like a guy who owns a video rental store? Not a lot of demand. You'd question how effective that guy will be in that kind of position. Or is it like the guy who is a old-fashioned milkman, delivering bottles of milk door to door. I think you'd agree that's an outdated profession. Or is leadership like someone who sells 8-tracks for cars and trucks? And some of our younger listeners are going, 8-tracks? What are 8-tracks? Is leadership dead? Is leadership obsolete? Well, there is an old model of leadership that really does need to be put to rest. We need a funeral for a leadership style that is tired, that is unproductive, a leadership style that controls, that manipulates, that exploits those who are followers. That kind of leadership needs to be put out to pasture, needs to be put to rest. But in these times, in these difficult times, we desperately need a kind of leadership that will build up projects and people. Leadership makes a difference, for better, for worse. But why leadership? Do we really need another sermon about leadership? Shouldn't we just kind of leave leadership to the experts like Patrick Lencioni, all his books? Maybe you should read his books. Maybe you should attend Harvard Business School or listen to the latest leader give a talk, a TED Talk or whatever. Is there a place for us to focus and think about leadership, especially in a church context? Remember a book I read years ago by Bill Hybels, encouraging leaders to look at leadership, especially in the church context. He came up with some statements, some affirmations about leadership. I concur with them, so I will use the phrase, I believe. I hope you believe that we'd be able actually to say we believe. So let me just review a half dozen of these leadership affirmations. I believe that the church is the most intensive leadership enterprise in society. Just think of mobilizing all of these volunteers. The demands and the rewards of leadership are great in the church. I believe, secondly, that, and this is in two parts, all of us as Christ followers are going to be called to some degree of leadership, maybe in various places, in various forms, whether it's in business, in a classroom, in your home. Even self-management involves a degree of leadership. But some people are especially spiritually gifted in leadership. Romans 12 makes that clear when leadership is one of the gifts listed there in that part of Romans. Leadership, like other spiritual gifts, needs to be discovered. It needs to be developed. It needs to be deployed. It needs to be used. The third affirmation is sad but true. Churches often undermine the expression of leadership in the church. Why is that? Well, sometimes it's the governance structure that makes it difficult for leaders to lead. Sometimes it's gender restrictions or limitations, often that are more traditional than biblical. And then there's the issue of stifling the freedom leaders need to lead. But the fourth affirmation is critical. I believe that all of us have a desire to be led. We need leaders. The fifth affirmation is, I believe that a key to God's redemptive plan in history, the unfolding of that through the Old Testament, New Testament, and even into 2020, involves excellence in leadership. It's part of God's plan. It's part of God's design for us and for His church. And then the final affirmation is, I believe that in the Bible contains principles about leadership and models and examples of leadership that will help us lead effectively. But what makes a leader an effective leader? What makes leadership for the better rather than for the worse? What are the marks of an effective leader? And where can we go for an example? Where can we go for a model of leadership? Well, I'm going to propose that one of the greatest examples in all of history and in the Bible is that of Nehemiah. Oh, I know that Nehemiah has been dead for a long, long time, but his style of leadership is alive. It is fresh. It is necessary for those of us who would lead in 2020. So what are the marks then of effective leadership that we see in Nehemiah? Now, just to remind you, last week we discovered that Nehemiah found out about the problems in Jerusalem. The wall had not been rebuilt. We talked about how Nebuchadnezzar had come in and destroyed Jerusalem, and then people were taken captive, exiled into Babylon, and then the Persians came and they took over from the Babylonians, and Cyrus, the Persian king, allowed Jews to return to Jerusalem. The first wave led by Zerubbabel, the second wave by Ezra. They rebuilt the temple, unfortunately stalled in the rebuilding of the walls, and then you have this final wave led by Nehemiah. So again, my question, what is it that we see in Nehemiah when it comes to an example of an effective leader? Well, I'd ask you to turn in your Bibles to Nehemiah chapter 2. This week, we're going to look at the first 10 verses. And then next week, we'll look at the remainder of Nehemiah chapter 2 under the banner of effective leadership. The rest of the messages in our series on Nehemiah, to some degree, are going to deal with this matter of leadership. So let's look at the first mark of effective leadership. An effective leader sets and achieves goals. Now, I'm going to ask you to go right to the middle of our passage this morning. In verse 4, King Artaxerxes asked Nehemiah, he said to me, "What is it you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven and answered the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it." Did you notice the king's question? It's a critical leadership question. What is it you want? And Nehemiah was able to give a very concise, direct answer. He knew where he wanted to go. He knew what he wanted to achieve, what he wanted to accomplish. Now, Nehemiah could have answered the king, "I really don't have an idea of what I want. I'm not sure if I want to stay in Persia or if I want to go to Jerusalem. I'm kind of fickle about it." Or he could have been very vague. He could have said, I think I want to go to Jerusalem. I'm not quite sure what I'll do there. Maybe I'll just hang around and encourage people." No, Nehemiah was precise. He was able to clearly express what he wanted to do, what he wanted to achieve, what he wanted to accomplish. Or as a friend of mine likes to ask, how do you define a win in that area or aspect of life? For Nehemiah, he could define the win. It was going to Jerusalem and rebuilding the city, the broken down walls, and rebuilding the gate and some of those repairs. He was able to be very specific. In church life, as we did in the spring, we talked about our core values that are based on our purposes and our mission. You look at the great commandment that Jesus reminded us of, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Likewise, love your neighbors, yourself. And then the Great Commission. Go, not to Jerusalem and repair a wall or rebuild a wall, but go and make disciples. That's what we're about. That's what we're to be doing. That's our goal. It would be like a guy who owns Joe's Pizza. And all of a sudden, you discover that he's decided to sell hot dogs. No pizza, but hot dogs. I would say to Joe, then you need to rename your establishment to Joe's Hot Dogs. Because if I go into Joe's Pizza, I expect to be able to buy pizza. In the same way, as a church, we should be all about making disciples. That fits Byron Community Church's goal of community outreach. A few years ago, we recruited and brought on staff Pastor Josh. He is focused on community outreach. So, for example, this summer, another successful run of the Ball Hockey League. It was very exciting and invigorating to see the ball hockey in action in August. Well, this is all part of our goal of community outreach that enables us, ultimately, to make disciples for our Lord Jesus Christ. The problem is, a lot of people lose their way when it comes to goals. I read recently about some killer whales that were beached on the coast of Florida. Scientists desperately wanted to discover what happened. Why did these whales end up beached and dead on the Florida shoreline? Their discovery was simple but profound. They discovered the leader of the group of whales had lost his way. That often happens. And when a leader loses his way, it creates a desperate situation, often a calamity for those who follow. Years ago, I was invited to speak at a church. They were having a celebration. They were burning the mortgage. They were now debt-free. What was interesting was when I asked one of the leaders in the church, so tell me a little bit about your programs and ministries. And he confessed, well, really, we don't have a lot going on, but we've paid off our mortgage. And then he smiled and said, we kind of just meet Sunday to Sunday. We're kind of growing old together. And I thought to myself, what a tragedy. Yes, the mortgage is dead, but in about 10 or 15 years, this church is going to be dead. What's the church going to be? A heritage center? Is it going to be sold off as a new condominium? No, we have to have our focus on the goals and set and achieve these admirable goals. Just as a last point under this banner, goals need to be communicated over and over and over again. If our goal is community outreach as a church, we need to state it and restate it. We need to clarify it, because only then can there be buy-in. No one is going to buy in to a goal that is fuzzy or unclear or ambiguous. So we need to be effective leaders who set and achieve goals. In church life, if you're a business leader, if you're in a classroom, in your family are counting on you as a family leader to set goals that can be achieved by the family. In the area of self-management, you need goals when it comes to your health and your well-being. Effective leaders set and achieve goals. Second of all, effective leaders make and develop plans. If A goal involves where are you going? A plan is about and how are you going to get there? And what I'd like to do is read our passage, Nehemiah 2, 1 to 10, and we're going to look at the three phases in Nehemiah making and developing a plan in order to achieve his goal. So reading at Nehemiah 2, verse 1, in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine as the cupbearer and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you're not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart. I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king said to me, what is it you want? Then I prayed to the God of heaven and I answered the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. Then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, how long will your journey take, and when will you get back? It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, if it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates, so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah, and may have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the royal park, so he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple, and for the city wall, and for the residence I will occupy. And because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my requests. So I went to the governors of Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. The king also sent army officers and cavalry with me. When Salbada, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the Ammonite official, heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. We'll stop at that point. So I said there are three phases of the plan. The first phase is kind of a precondition before the specific ask. I call this seizing the opportunity, and it would involve Nehemiah overcoming some obstacles, a key part in his plan. These obstacles could have been showstoppers, but Nehemiah, with God's help, was able to overcome these obstacles as part of his plan. I see four obstacles. The first obstacle is that of waiting. You will have noticed at the beginning of chapter 1, we're told that Nehemiah prayed in the month of Kislev. 4 months later, we're told in the at the start of chapter 2, it's in the month of Nisan. So there's a four-month gap between Nehemiah praying about the situation and Nehemiah having an opportunity to do something about it. Nehemiah learned the importance of waiting. I've seen all kinds of people who are impulsive. Nehemiah could have been impulsive. He could have said, I've heard there's a problem in Jerusalem. He could have snuck off in the middle of the night and gotten nowhere. He waited patiently for the right opportunity. No, I'm not promoting procrastination, but I've seen too many people fail because they've been impulsive, impatient, refusing to wait. Sometimes the quick way is not the best way. So last weekend, I was officiating a wedding. My son Mark was part of the wedding party. Along with his girlfriend Stephanie, we went up to the rehearsal on Friday night. I said, Mark, I know the best way to get to Bayfield. But Mark said, well, Dad, I've got the GPS on, and it's suggesting a quicker way. Wonderful. I'm not sure if it was a quicker way, but I'll tell you it wasn't the best way. I didn't realize there were so many gravel roads north of London. Why the GPS sent us on a series of gravel roads, I don't know. It wasn't good for the car. It wasn't good for my back. And we discovered the quick way isn't always the best way. Needless to say, we returned on paved roads back to London. Nehemiah, in his plan, was willing to wait. The second obstacle that could have been there was the obstacle of discontentment. Nehemiah was sad in the presence of the king. Now, scholars have a great debate. Was Nehemiah, who had never shown sadness before, it was very much against royal protocol to be sad in the presence of the king. But was this a calculated risk or decision on Nehemiah's part to get the king's attention? Or was it just a slip-up? Well, in either case, Nehemiah's discontentment, his sadness, was sincere. It was genuine. He was very disturbed about the situation. Now, sometimes sadness or discontentment or depression can be a showstopper. It kind of stalls us. We get stuck where we are. But in Nehemiah's case, discontentment was a catalyst. It was a catalyst for change, for doing something. In my observations, some of the greatest change, some of the greatest decisions have been made because a leader has been discontent, refusing to be satisfied with the status quo, refusing to settle for mediocrity. In Nehemiah's case, discontentment was a good thing. The third thing I want to comment on, a possible obstacle, was failure. This is quite intriguing. Did you know that in Ezra's time, during that second wave, there was an attempt to rebuild the wall? But the person who put a stop to it was King Artaxerxes. The very same king that Nehemiah is making his appeal to. And past failure often stops us. But Nehemiah did not let that stop him. Even though there had been failure in the past, Nehemiah tried again. He made another attempt to appeal to the king. I read a book years ago, Failure, the Back Door to Success. I have a friend recently who launched a new initiative and experienced failure. When I talk to him, I want to communicate to him, don't give up. Try another idea. Try again. You show me a good leader, and I will show you someone at some point who has experienced failure. Failure often is a prompter that leads us into a new arena of success. The final obstacle was out of fear. Nehemiah admits that he was very much afraid. Was he afraid that the king was going to reject him? Afraid that the king had caught him looking sad? We really don't know that, but Nehemiah acknowledges that he was fearful. But he overcame that fear. In leadership, the question, what do you want, is important, as is the question, what are you afraid of? A good leader learns the importance of being courageous and being bold, of leaning on God and any other resource to overcome those fears. So that's the first phrase that enabled Nehemiah to seize the opportunity. The second phase of the plan was the ask. Nehemiah asked the king for a favor. Three things I noticed. First of all, Nehemiah was was very prudent, or I'll use a word that Pastor Josh particularly likes. Nehemiah was shrewd. Did you notice that Nehemiah, in the request, never mentions specifically Jerusalem? Maybe he calculated that the king already had reacted years ago to the rebuilding of the wall of Jerusalem. I don't believe Nehemiah was being deceptive, but it was like, I don't need to put a lot of attention on Jerusalem. It's the city where my ancestors are buried. It's that place in Judah. Also, did you notice the queen was sitting beside the king? Can I speculate that the queen liked Nehemiah, and that would put him in a favorable position? Of course, the other thing we see in the ask was Nehemiah prayed about it. When the king asked, "What do you want?" Nehemiah said, "Then I prayed to God." Have you ever been in that situation where just at that moment where you need to make the request, you need to make that presentation, you say, "Oh God, please help." That's what Nehemiah did in that situation. And then the third thing I notice about the ask is that Nehemiah had built some social equity, some social capital. He had deposited into that account over the many years he served the king, and now came time for a withdrawal. Nehemiah, in terms of his reputation, in terms of his character, Nehemiah proved that he could be trusted. The king liked Nehemiah, and so he was in a position where he was able to make the request. And then the final phase of the plan was it was a detailed plan. Nehemiah wasn't winging it. I once worked with a person. Actually, I supervised her. And her favorite expression was, "I'm just going to wing it." I'm all for spontaneity, but there's sometimes just winging it is an excuse for laziness. Nehemiah had worked out a detailed plan. The king asked him about timing, and Nehemiah set a time. We'll discover later, Nehemiah, that he went to Jerusalem for about 12 years. The rebuilding of the wall only took a couple of months, but there were other initiatives and projects that Nehemiah was involved in. Nehemiah requested letters. How smart and clever. Nehemiah wanted a letter for safe passage. He was going through some territories operated by enemies of Judah. And then he asked for a letter so he could secure some timber to repair the gates for the rebuilding of the wall, even so he could build a house for himself while he was in Jerusalem. And then what's exciting is, I think because the king realized that Nehemiah had a really good plan, the king offered some extras. So we read here that the army officers and a cavalry went with Nehemiah. Nehemiah got way more than he asked for. Why? Because he had a good plan. Effective leaders make and develop an action plan, a good plan. You need a plan if you're a church leader. Churches need plans. I was excited a few months ago when it came to our building and facility. We came up with a detailed plan that covers over the next 5 years, a plan for restoring, for fixing, for attending to some building projects. It's just a real good thing to have a plan. You need a plan in your family. I hope you have a family budget, looking at the idea of maybe future repairs or future things that need to be done. And when it comes to self-management, you need a good plan when it comes to your diet, when it comes to exercise, when it comes to wellness. The final two marks of an effective leader I'm just going to touch on. The third mark of an effective leader is dealing with criticism and opposition. Right at the end of our reading, we read about Sanballat and Tobiah. They're going to reappear because Nehemiah realized that when you are going to get things done, especially for God, expect criticism and opposition. In fact, a mentor of mine once said, if you're doing anything worthwhile for God, you'll know it because there's criticism and opposition. And we're going to have a whole message in 2 or 3 weeks that's just going to deal with overcoming opposition. We're introduced to the opposition here in verse 10, but we're going to see them full force when the rebuilding of the wall is going on. The final mark of an effective leader is effective leaders are willing to be led. Yes, they lead, but they're also ones who are willing to be led. I love Nehemiah's relationship with the king. He had been a faithful servant. He had been a faithful worker for the king. And the king recognized that. And I think that built into Nehemiah's effectiveness. Show me a good leader, and I will show you someone who has been and in other ways continues to be a good follower. And of course, ultimately, Nehemiah was led by God. We see that even in chapter 2. Nehemiah talks about praying to God. He talks about God's gracious hand being on him. Now, let's just clarify something. Some people say, oh, John, this is too much about leadership and organization and administration. I believe in a more spiritual approach. I believe it's about faith and about God. That's how things get done. Well, I don't think it's either or. I believe our God, who recognizes our faith and dependence on Him, works through our goal setting, our planning, our organization. It's not either or, but a blending of both. And Nehemiah was a man who was willing to be led by God, a God who expected Nehemiah to exercise good leadership through setting goals and achieving them, through making and developing plans, and as we'll see in weeks to come, facing up to and overcoming opposition. Leadership makes a difference. It can be for worse, but with God's help and by His grace, may it always be for the better. Amen.